I want the facts. Now, power should not be overused. We've made our point. History will show that lots of labor unions in America and some of us taxpaying citizens have had trust abrogated by people to whom we gave the trust, who have bowed to an orchestrated divestment pressure. When the duty of a trustee for a labor union retirement fund is to have those funds make money to retire the people that have worked with their sweat and toil through the years. And when some college kids can force them to divest of the money to the disadvantage of the future beneficiaries, they have forfeited their trust and they should have resigned if they couldn't stick to their guns. The duty of a trustee is to his beneficiary. And if I work and deposit money into a labor union retirement fund, I expect them to make money with it, and money doesn't get cleansed. The only way you cleanse money is put it in heaven. It's all dirty money otherwise. And I can't stand the hypocrisy that sends wheat to Russia and divests South Africa. The ones to tell the trustees of a labor union retirement fund to divest in South Africa are the retirees and the labor union members that are making the contributions to it. Not some addle-pated college crowd orchestrated by some college professor that's also eating off of my tax dollars. I don't want to pay more tax dollars because I got gutless commissioners in my city who divest under pressure when they got one responsibility, and that's to invest that money in ways that are prudent under the prudent investment law. Now, there's going to be some real moral questions raised. If economic sanctions and divestment is taken to a degree that it forces a country to fall and go communist, now you've violated the rights of the beneficiaries of the trust, and you've also violated the rights of the country you put under pressure. Apartheid was a mistake. I'd tell that to Peter Botta, if he'd let me. It has failed. Totally failed. So has the division between North and South Vietnam. Failed. There are lots of things in history have failed. But it's a proven fact you'll fight harder for something you've said than you would for the same thing if you hadn't said it. And whomever is in leadership in South Africa has got some strong currents to swim in. The Afrikaners still remember the Boer War. They still tell the fictitious story, and it's not true, that the British took 20,000 women and children during the Boer War. I collect stamps. That's one of my specialties, the Boer War. I expect to win a national grand award on Boer War postal history. I got a rare book collection on the Boer War that I think I'd rather give my arm away than give it. It's not true. But there are Afrikaners that have been raised on this. They believe that the British took 20,000 women and children, put them in a concentration camp and put glass in their food, ground up glass, and killed them. Now, what is true? They heartlessly and ruthlessly disregarded hygiene and disease. An epidemic swept through the camp, and a responsibility that's a scar on the English activity during the Boer War will stand there for a long, long time. But they didn't feed them glass. They were stupid more than anything else, and to a degree not caring, and did nothing when they should have done something. But that can be said of the leaders of the United States in the early years of the war regarding the refugees out of Europe. They didn't act soon enough. In fact, Breck Long and Eldridge Dubrow in the State Department deliberately kept the message that came from the Confidant in 1942, in August of 1942, deliberately kept the news as an absolute act. They didn't believe it, so they kept President Roosevelt from finding out what that Swiss informant had told them on absolute proven bona fides concerning the gassing of the Jews in Poland. They kept it from even Stevie Wise. They kept it from Roosevelt and Stevie Wise until November. And while they sat on the news, another million Jews were gassed. If we're going to start throwing stones, let's start turning around, aiming every direction. And I'm sorry, let's make some Jews mad, but there were some German Jews that supported the Nazis at the outset in America. And Anthony Eden said in a memo to one of his aides, "If we must make a choice on this question, let me murmur in your ear. I prefer Arabs to Jews." There's an awful lot of evil in this world. But when you get somebody's attention and they have recognized that they can't keep going the way they're going, diplomacy and statesmanship gives them a chance to save a little face and backs off and sees if the good lick between the eyes of the mule will cause it to start pulling the plow. You don't just shoot him because emotion is mounted. Now, there are Boer War descendants among the Afrikaners that believe God gave them that country. They carried a, read the covenant by James Michener. They carried a Bible under their arm and wouldn't act until they could find a passage in the Old Testament. And they're dealing with the Zulus. And they're laying out of their territory. And there are Afrikaners that in their secrecy will tell you, "We're just like you Americans. We fought the British. The only difference is you won, we lost." There are Indians there. You won't find a monument to Mahatma Gandhi there either, but the Indians know him, remember him. And these people have taken their stand and tried what they considered to be a grand experiment that protected their interest over the centuries. And what we have is an issue of power. People who have power don't want to give it up. You better believe if the situation were reversed in South Africa and blacks were in the position that the whites are in, they wouldn't give it up either. This isn't a black-white issue. This is entrenched power rationalized over the years with rising freedom, and there is an orchestrated revolutionary spirit going on, and if we keep crowding the issue to the breaking point, there's going to be a revolution. South Africa is going communist. Now, Ronald Niebuhr taught me that You don't, in this life, have the chance for ideal choices. You must make tragic choices. That was the mistake of the clergyman in Germany. That's what brought the guts out of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who had escaped to New York. And that's what brought the blazing truth out of his heart and soul as he penned The Cost of Discipleship. Those idealistic German clergymen thought they had a choice between their ideals and war. They didn't have a choice between their ideals and war. They had a choice between tyranny and war. And he went back to Germany to write and pen his greatest writings in a prison cell to make his protest. Now, two giants that black people and colored folks should saint have proven the power of passive resistance. It's slow and it's painful. But India didn't go communist. I refuse to believe that the blacks are better off in Zimbabwe. One of their exiled writers is grubbing out a living on about a 2-acre plot of ground. He's better off exiled. He's a hero there. Now, I am not willing to take the simple-minded, beat-on-us, one-way litany about South Africa. If revolution must come, it ain't gonna get my sympathy. This modern world, there is enough power cautiously used to make even a bully. I had an employee once, he was worthless until he got in trouble and got on parole. The only way he could stay out of jail was work for me. Or, you know, stick to the job he had. He became an amazingly good worker. Now, I will not plead for apartheid, but the point has been made on South Africa. What I'm pleading for is, where is a sane voice saying, hold up a minute, we've been beating on them, we've gotten their attention, where is the point where you back off and say, now, what are you going to do about it? And give them time to do it. Now, if we don't pay attention to history, we keep repeating the same mistakes. That's why history is taught in our schools. I'm going to make a prophecy. It's not from God, it's common sense and knowledge of history. If the Senate votes its sanctions on Monday, and President Reagan does not veto it and have enough support that it cannot be overridden, South Africa will have a bloodbath and will go communist. The only disappointment I've had in Bishop Tutu is when he broke under pressure and appeared to give a half-hearted blessing to the necessity of violence. My suggestion is he quit speaking for the black people or draw his courage from Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi and keep doing what he has been doing. A voice of passive resistance. There is worse. I don't think revolution is worse than what was. I think I'm honest and realist and tragic enough to know that. But we haven't yet got in South Africa Nazi Germany. It's ludicrous to draw such analogies. They aren't making lampshades out of black skins. They aren't hauling them off in trucks and gassing them. That's what I hate about the media, are these non sequitur analogies that insult my intelligence. Embryonically, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But the power has been checked. South Africa has no oil. You pay $3 a gallon for gas, maybe $5. There are billions of dollars tied to banks. Any smart banker knows when you're in trouble, you let the fellow know if he doesn't pay his bills, you're going to foreclose on him. But no honest, reasonable bank is in the business of foreclosing. That's the last resort they want. That's why they're not just satisfied with collateral, they want to know about capacity to pay. That's why most of your debtors, when they get your attention, if you set up some system that shows them you're working at it and trying a little, they'll give you time. That's just common sense in the world. But we've got a bunch of bugling trumpet heads that are guilty of the very thing they're casting the stones about. They got the bit in their teeth, they want to run with it. They got power of persuasion. They want to take the credit for another revolution. They're insulting my intelligence. You don't bring people into 20th century American civil rights consciousness without a few years of Martin Luther King and his marches. Now, if revolution must come to South Africa, I want to be one. See, I happen to believe that each of us get out of a foxhole as though the whole war depends upon us. I want to know that I've made the decision that that's the only alternative based upon facts, that I haven't been pushed into it. Don't you feel that way? Yes, South Africa's brought to the brink and are begging for time. Now, what do we lose by giving them time? Not like Second World War, where 4 months will result in a million deaths. Why don't we give them time? But I'm telling you, if the Senate votes the sanctions, I'll be sitting here saying, I told you so. They're going to go communist. I'll tell you what I want to do. I'm going to go to South Africa. I haven't gone anywhere in the 10 years that I've been here. How many of you remember when I was elected pastor? I had just returned from Australia and was on my way to South Africa. Any of you here remember that? I haven't gone anywhere in 10 years. Don't you think I'm entitled to a trip? I have to tell you, I don't trust Jerry Falwell's viewpoint. You know, I admire his courage. At least he's got the guts to come out and say a different point of view. That's the only thing that I've been able to admire him for some time. He probably doesn't admire me for anything. So I'm one up on him. But I don't trust anybody's viewpoint that comes home and calls Bishop Tutu a phony. So he ain't helping us. I don't trust Jesse Jackson's viewpoint. I mean, out of one side of his mouth, he argues we ought to talk to that murdering Arafat and then play self-righteous in South Africa. You know, I'm sorry, you know, I like Jesse Jackson. I think Jesse Jackson gave the greatest speech I ever heard. But I think he's got a party line, too. I mean, I want to see him. You know, they're always wanting me to defend us black folks. I want to see him defend us white folks on something. I mean, there's got to be something we're right on. I mean, I just don't like one-way people. You always know where Jerry Falwell's going. He's heading right down the right side of the road. If he ever goes to another country, the driver on the other side of the road going to be damned his head on you ever saw in your life. You always know where Jesse Jackson's going to drive. He drives left side of the road. Damn it, you just get on the other side of the road. You're going to take it right on the chin. And I admire him. I watched him. He's the only man I ever saw that actually bearded this arch conservative that sits back like this all the time. What's his name on Firing Line, you know? He can spin off a phrase better than anybody I've ever heard. What's his name? Now, there's a man that's got brains. And the only fellow I've ever seen take him on the debate that just sort of left him saying, well, you win, was Jesse Jackson. And I think Jesse Jackson carries a torch and a lot of anger justifiably for things that he bore. But I've been around long enough to know that if you just throw your car in one kind of gear and assume because the color is black that there's only one problem and one answer, you're liable to be caught in a place where your simple answer ain't the right one. You see, I got Cherokee blood in me. They told me when we went to school, remember the first day I went to school, some teacher told me that I had to have colored blood in me because my hair was a color. It was so curly. I had real curly hair when I was a kid. I went home and asked my parents. Didn't bother me. I never knew there was any such a thing as a race prejudice till I got to the big city. Some of my best friends, I didn't see color. The only thing I got mad about is that I'd work all summer to try to get their color and they didn't have to do a damn thing to start right out. I'm sunburned and they're running around, no problems. I think that somebody needs to go over there that has the guts to just lay it out on TV till you've got some sense. And I'm naive enough to believe that I may be the only one that can go over there with my disciplined PhD perspective that if you turn a fact, you turn a light on. You remember I told you once my major professor wrote to my first job and the guy gave me his letter and he shouldn't have done it. It was a confidential letter. But when I took my first job, my boss, after I was there a while, showed me a letter from my major prof. My major prof says, in his recommendation to me, says, you'll probably make a mistake about Gene. You'll get the idea that he's hard-headed and tenacious. And argumentative. But he's not. He will argue for understanding of the point of view that he's presenting. But once he's got his facts on the table and you present yours, if you introduce a fact, now this is my major professor talking about me, and I'm sort of sitting there like I'm looking in the mirror and seeing myself the way I never really saw myself. He says, you introduce a new fact and lay it on the table, Gene's mental computer will absorb that fact and click, 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 and rearrange itself, and you'll still be arguing with him an hour later when he's gotten on your side. He's just so totally ruled by the facts as they get in front of him that he doesn't get emotionally involved with the idea just because he happened to have held it a few minutes earlier. And I thought about it, and I've been that way. That's why, and as a Christian, you come along and give me facts that blow the resurrection of Jesus Christ, I don't need God. Confucius' golden rule is more workable than Jesus. Jesus said, do unto others you wish to be done unto. You can only do that if the Spirit of God dominates you. The problem is, self-styled Christians that are sinners are cramming their... I don't want them doing to me what they want done to them. You just tell my case. Confucius says, don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself. Now, if there's no God, no power of the Spirit, Confucius is a much more pragmatic way to live and will work better than Jesus' golden rule. Jesus' golden rule only works if the Spirit of God dwells in you. I don't need Christianity if Jesus didn't come out of that grave. I don't need a first cause. Infinite regression doesn't bother my mind at all. Just keep whirring on forever. I don't want to go to South Africa. I think it's time for me to make that trip that I postponed 10 years ago and see, and not one of these two-day wonder things. I'd like to go for a couple of weeks. How many of you would like to see me broadcast live from South Africa? And I tell you something. What have we lost, and what has South Africa lost, if the U.S. Senate backs off on sanctions for one more term? What have we lost? Now, the risk factor is, if they come in with the sanctions, South Africa's already got the message. All sanctions are going to do is break them. So the decision ought to be made. Do you really want to make South Africa pause and its leadership face up to they have to do something, or do you want to kill them? You know, you can, when somebody's sick, you can either give them shock treatments, or you can just put a 45 in their head and blow their brains out. Now, it's my studied judgment that South Africa's got the message. They need a little time now. What's one term? That make sense to you?
Yes.
What is this passion to keep whipping this cow? I mean, she's put her foot in the bucket. My granddad practiced here, bossy, but he only hit the cow once. He didn't beat her all the way back in the barn, cut her legs off, and then shoot her. Now I'm just fed up. I'm on the side of right. But I think this godless communistic sweep across Africa has gone as far as it should go. And South Africa ought to be given the chance. They've had enough from private industry and the pressure on them. Why can't our Senate back off for one term? Does that make sense? I got black folks listening to me. Now, if you can get them to back off one term, I can get South African time to at least be one satellite up there and one network that isn't owned by any party line, that can give you some intelligent ability to assess the situation. I'm one pastor who doesn't tell my people how to vote. I just tell you, be intelligent. But in a subtle way, the media is telling us how to vote. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Now, I found that I still have that modicum of common sense that's seldom seen on television. If I have an audience, it's because I have been an island of common sense to the majority of common sense people out there that don't like what, you know, if I don't like it, I say it. And amazingly, there are lots of people who don't like it. Been waiting for somebody to say it. We had Kent State, you know. No amount of rationale will justify Kent State. I have great friends among the Jews. There are some of them that want to forget the fact that a few of them, in the agony of decision-making time, gave thought to, encouragement to, and even participated in that black transfer agreement. It was abandoned, but some participated. There are a few Jews that suffered because Ben-Gurion and Chaim Weizmann were just human enough to be a little bit jealous of each other. There ain't any color or any race or any group that got a premium on human weakness. Now, I am naive. I happen to believe that there are enough people who listen to me that I'd like to start a letter-writing campaign to the Senate that says, you can disagree with me all you want. That's healthy. I'm trying to give an alternative viewpoint. I think it's premature for the Senate to vote sanctions. And I'm willing to sit here and say, I'll say to the nation, I told you so, when they go communist, if we vote those sanctions. And they're allowed to pass. Now, I would just like to take my phones tonight and do a sample. You say, well, I don't know which is the right way to go. When you don't know, don't move too fast. And I don't think we know enough yet for government-to-government sanctions of the degree that the Senate's voting on Monday. And the Senate is supposed to express our voice, not be under the control of an orchestrated, one-way, emotion-laden appeal. I'm going to stick my neck out. I want to go to South Africa, and I'd like for the sanctions to not come down before I go. How many of you think I ought to go? Put the phone number on the screen. 25 to 1, 25 to 4 on the East Coast. I wonder how many phone calls I can engender from people of every race that are big enough to rise above race and say, are we letting emotions cause us to apply a stereotyped imagery to a situation that we've already hit between the eyes enough to get the attention? And does decency, intelligence, and leadership demand that having made our point in an interconnected world that has a sense of decency, we're going to stand back and give it at least a year to see if a bloodbath can be avoided? Is that common sense? Well, there may be some killed in the meantime. Well, not if people settle down to let's see what happens for a year. We need an armistice on the subject. I'm tired of these media people drumming up violence. That's the only thing that they know how to report. If somebody comes along and, you know, it's like the church, you know, I'm bringing grace and peace, and they can't fight anymore. I mean, you know. It's like Jesus healing the sick in Jerusalem. Spit on some mud and put it on, made a mud ball and put it on the blind man's eyes, and he was healed. So everybody saw it and built a spit mud ball healing church. Went to another part of Jerusalem and spoke, and somebody was healed. So they built a speak and be healed church. Went to another part of Jerusalem, touched a blind eye, and he was healed. So they had a touch and be healed church. And they were all healing the sick. Wonderful. Till those touch and be healed people heard about spit and mud ball healers. Then healing no longer amounted to anything. It was all a big fight. That the touch and be healed people might prove the spit and mud ball healers wrong. I want to go to South Africa. I'm tired of being brainwashed. I don't need to travel. You all know I've had plenty of that. But I think that there's too much of this song and dance litany, and it's time for some voice that's saying to ask some questions and to get some facts before the American public. Is the way we're doing it being pushed too far? I believe in what we've done, but I think we've done it. It's time to back off and see if the mule will work now. Don't kill him. That's my opinion. I'd like yours. 1-800-338-3030. I'm asking two questions. You think I ought to go to South Africa? And will you help set me free long enough to go? And number two, I think every person ought to start calling tomorrow his senator. Don't ask me the name of your senator. Look it up. Call the city library and ask him what your senator's name and number is. And how many of you will call your senator starting tomorrow and say, just wait a while. It's too soon to drop the sanctions on them. That's what I'm asking. See, I look at the news and I see workers going to work with a big smile on their face, and yet the news media is telling me they're being shot with rubber bullets and whipped. I never saw people smile with rubber bullets and whips hitting them. Now, maybe some are being shot and some of them are being whipped, and that's awful. But are we getting selective reporting? Now, I teach, as you know, on the lost tribes. And possessing the gates of your enemies, you don't give them away. Now, I think it's time for intelligent America to insist upon this issue being raised above race riots. It's bigger than that. I want to ask the question, is Iran better off today than it was under the Shah? The Shah had to go. Obviously, he died. Now, the simple-minded listening to me tonight and the stupid and the bigoted are going to say, I've taken sides. No, I haven't. I've taken sides on sanity and backing off and sucking in the breath and see if what's been done can have any impact. But don't push it to overkill until there's, if the purpose was to destroy totally South Africa, why not land the Marines or drop a bomb? The purpose of sanctions was to get a response. The response has been gotten. Now give them a chance. Now I want all of you to call your senator or send him a telegram. If you don't know who he is, call your city library and ask them who your senator is and how you reach him. And register a protest from whichever state you're watching me in, begging for time. We got enough bloodbaths in this world. We need a modern Gandhi, a modern Martin Luther King, not a Castro. People believed in Nicaragua when I was in Nicaragua in 1963. They were still telling the stories that Marines landed and threw babies up and caught them on the bayonets of their rifles. We need to know the frame of reference of those people and quit having it stamped with a 1960s rubber stamp of the United States and the South. And I want to go to South Africa, and I want to broadcast from South Africa live. That means I got to start. If I broadcast from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m., that will be all of my live time every night. In fact, when I started tonight at 9 o'clock, it was 6 o'clock tomorrow in South Africa. So I can go to South Africa and do a show, get up early every morning and start at 6 a.m. on Wednesday. 6 a.m. Wednesday morning would be 9 p.m. Tuesday night. I can live with that. I don't have too much desire to go to a place where, in order to do my live time, I'd have to do the show at 4 a.m. I can handle 6 a.m. I think that I have the capacity to do a live show from South Africa. I'll let Bishop Tutu get on and not have a little old short speech. He can talk as long as he wants on our network. Don't you think we need that window? I'll lend my network to it. And American people deserve a chance to know the facts before our representatives vote sanctions. That I'm not sure all of you want your senator to vote yet. You don't know the facts. Now just get up on your back and call and say, just wait a cotton picking minute. Let's look this thing over for a while. And I know what the answer is going to be. It's been looked over for a long time. Well, not by us. Wrong people been doing the looking. Let's you and me, America, take a look. Get on the phone. The intelligent America. I'm naive. See, I think all the intelligent people in every city I'm in watch me. Play that song again. I want to know. I already feel it buzzing in my bones. I want to go to South Africa. I want to get to the bottom of this thing. See, some of the voices we're hearing are already running for president on this issue. I hear one person go to South Africa and he says he wants to make sure that we make friends now with the side that's going to win eventually. Well, now, how many of you remember that what happened in Germany was a tyranny of the majority? There have been a few times in this world that the majority has been as tyrannical as minorities. I'm for avoiding a bloodbath, and I'm placing bets that if we prematurely keep tightening this screw on sanctions, it's time to give some breathing room. Then, if the breathing room shows no progress and no results, then start tightening the screw again. But the screw's tight enough. We're going to screw their head off if we keep going. And a dead patient ain't worth much. We're about to put South Africa in a position it can't even donate its organs.